right. Hey, everybody, and welcome to Caped Chronicles. This is episode number 65 here on January the 17th, 2021. This time on Caped Chronicles, we're going to talk about X-Men First Class for 2011. And we have four amazing hosts on this podcast. We have number one, we have the one, the only, the great Fred himself. How are you, Fred?
I am doing fantastic, buddy. How are you?
I am doing wonderful today. And Andrea's laughing. I don't know why she's laughing. I didn't do nothing. Apparently, my pictures for the, you know, we're on this video call, guys, and apparently my pictures, they're not sufficing everybody in here.
They are of the sensual manner.
They are not. So, okay, so I posted a picture of Mystique. Everybody lost their minds.
In bed. I mean,
I posted a picture of Natalie Portman, because why not? And then everybody lost their minds again.
Yeah.
Well, see, you guys have to understand, like, yo, Mike's position against the picture makes it look like he's leaning against them in a very specific. Whatever you say, Fred.
Freeze.
Oh boy.
Oh boy. Fred, I'm glad you're doing good though, man.
Yeah, things have been really good. Weather here has been off and on, which is kind of crappy, but we're trying to get out and enjoy what we can. It was a nice day yesterday.
Fine, so off and on. Walk.
Well, we get a lot of rain.
Oh, okay. I'm jealous.
It hasn't been as cold as it probably should be for winter, but we'll take it.
Okay. And the next person up of one of our amazing, great hosts that we have on this podcast is Carrie.
What did you do now, Mike? What did you do now, Mike?
I just said amazing and great. I did that for Fred too.
Oh, okay. I'm doing good. It's kind of like early summer here in LA. It's the middle of winter. I've had my air conditioner going for 2 days. Because it's also been 90 degrees here.
Oh wow,
that's rough. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, like I almost want snow, and I never want snow.
Yeah, well, we'll send you some. And one of our last hosts is Andrea. What's up?
Wow! You know what? It's okay. I like your background right now, so I can kind of push you into the garbage and actually think about what's right behind you. But I'm doing fantastic, Mike. Thank you very much.
Oh, good. Douchebag. No, Andrea is an amazing host. By the way, what Andrea has been staring at now is Hugh Jackman's shirtless body as Wolverine. Oh. No, Andrew, I'm so glad to have you on this podcast. Yeah. We're a great 2021 so far. And I'm also Mike. And again, we're going to keep going here in this podcasting world of Caped Chronicles. As far as like show announcements, we don't have any because we do the same thing every single time. We talk about a movie, but as far as network announcements goes, if you are interested in watching WandaVision, we have a new show on the network called MCU TV, where they kind of break down and look at the most recent Marvel Cinematic Universe television shows that are on Disney Plus. And this week, I think they talked about the first episode of WandaVision, which I have not yet seen yet.
First two episodes of WandaVision.
First two episodes
dropped. Yeah, and then it'll go week by week.
Okay, I've not seen the episode yet, so I have no idea what they're even like.
They're quite fun. I didn't walk in with any expectations, and it was pleasantly surprising how, like, fun it was. It was cute.
Okay.
It was perfectly
okay. Yeah, I have a feeling it's going to get not cute very quickly.
Yeah. It had a lot of Twilight Zone kind of vibes. at some points, and it was a little bit spooky. But overall, it had a very, very playful vibe, so I liked it.
Does I have to ask this though, because I haven't seen it yet, so don't spoil it for me. Does my girl Darcy show up?
No, not yet.
Not yet.
She's supposed to be supposed to be in the show at some point.
Didn't she die in the first episode?
No.
Mike.
Oh, no spoilers. No.
Brad, sorry.
Oh, called out. Oh, my goodness. All right. So we're going to do then, everybody. We are going to go ahead and get started then with this film. So, Andrea, why don't you tell us what movie you're watching and a little bit about this movie?
Sure. So this movie starts out in the 1960s, where superpowered humans Charles Xavier and Eric Lenscher work together to find others like them. But Eric's vengeful pursuit of an ambitious mutant who ruined his life causes a
schism.
Oh, schism. I was like, what is that? Is that German? Causes a divide in them. And this closely relates to, I believe it's the first X-Men movie where we see a flashback of Eric's, what happened in his childhood.
Yeah, I like that they reused that scene.
Yeah.
I don't know if they refilmed it, but I think that's the same kid from the first.
Yeah.
From the first version of that, and I like that they reused that. Mm-hmm. And then just use that as a jumping off point.
Yeah.
Me too.
It added a lot of continuity. Absolutely.
So, and it is part of the X-Men universe. Moving on to the box office for it. Distributed was 20th Century Fox with a runtime of 132 minutes, PG-13. Released June 3rd of 2011 with a budget of $160 million and a successful worldwide gross of $353.6 million. It was pretty average among Rotten Tomatoes with 86% for critics and an 87% for the audience. So both parties were in agreement with one another. It was a pretty good movie. as far as competition, 2 weeks after this movie came out, the next movie on Cape Chronicles list we're going to watch, Green Lantern, came out with Deadpool himself.
So, until he goes back and corrects that, but yeah.
Yes. So other than that, there's really no other box office competition for this movie.
Cool. All right, so cast and crew. The director was Matthew Vaughn. He's also known for directing the Kingsman series. Actors, we got a lot of actors this time around. So, topping off the list, we got James McAvoy as Charles Xavier, also was Wesley in Wanted and Leto II in Children of Dune. Also, Mr. Tubness in Chronicles of Narnia. Michael Fassbender is Eric Lenscher, aka Magneto. He was Pat in Band of Brothers and Walter in Alien Covenant. Kevin Bacon as Sebastian Shaw. He was Ren in Footloose. And this one's for Mike. He was Valentine McKee in Tremors.
Woohoo!
Freak yeah!
Jennifer Lawrence as Raven, a.k.a. Mystique. She was Katniss Everdeen in The Hunger Games and Aurora Lane in Passengers. Nicholas Holt as Hank, a.k.a. Beast. He was Nux in Mad Max Fury Road and J.R.R. Tolkien in Tolkien. That was a good movie, by the way. I highly recommend
it. Never saw it.
I recommend you guys go watch that movie. January Frost as Emma... January Jones as Emma Frost. I can talk, really. I can. She was also Melissa in The Last Man on Earth and Betty Francis on Mad Men. Zoe Kravitz as Angel Salvador. She was Christina in the Divergent series, and she's going to be Catwoman in the Batman movie.
She's got the Catwoman part down from watching this movie.
She does. Jason Fleming as Azrael. He was Jekyll and Hyde in League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, and he is Lord James Harwood on Pennyworth. Rose Byrne as Moira McTaggart. She was Dorme in Star Wars Episode II, and she was Penny Moore in This Is Where I Leave You, also a very funny movie. Caleb Landry Jones as Cassidy, a.k.a. Banshee. He was also Jimmy Adler on Friday Night Lights. Edie Gathergi as Darwin, a.k.a. Armando Munoz. He was Laurent in the Twilight series, and Matthias Solomon on Blacklist. And Lucas Till as Alex Summer, a.k.a. Havoc. He is MacGyver in the current MacGyver series. Mm-hmm. And then the composer was Henry Jackman, who's also done, I think, most of the X-Men films. I could be wrong. Yeah. Also Falcon and Winter Soldier, and Captain America Civil War.
All right.
All right.
Fred, you're up, man.
So, I was waiting for you to introduce me.
I'm sorry, the one
wow
man of the hour, Fred.
There we go.
Tell us what is going on behind the scenes of
behind
this
the scenes, some
Supervals movie.
Yeah, a couple little neat facts here. The yellow parts of the X-Men suit was made from a rare Chinese silk, which was only a few yards was produced. This increased the value of the suits drastically. John Ramsay, the lead singer of the Canadian band Marianas Trench, provides the Banshee's screams in the film.
That's amazing.
I guess he just couldn't do it himself.
I put that in there just because.
The total body count for this movie was 74.
I thought it was more than that.
It felt like more.
It did feel like more.
Some alternate casting options that were out for Sebastian Shaw was Bryan Cranston.
That could have been interesting.
For sure. For Mystique was Amber Heard.
No.
No.
And for Emma Frost, Alice Eve.
That maybe.
Yeah, I could see her being. Yeah.
Emma Frost was always one of those characters in the X-Men that always intrigued me. Like, I would love to see more done with Emma Frost.
Emma Frost a telepath?
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
She supposedly, if I know X-Men enough, which I don't know a lot, but from what I can remember, she is second to Charles Xavier in her telepathic abilities, not counting Jean Grey, of course.
Because Jean Grey is off the charts.
Right. Jean Grey is off the charts. You know, Jean Grey overtakes Xavier and Emma Frost, but she's second to none to Charles Xavier. So I would love to see I don't think Marvel will do it, but I would love to see her brought in as a villain when they bring the X-Men in, and really push her as a main villain and not kill her off like they did. Was the villain they had in Thor, Ragnarok? Crap. I want to say Hera, but that's not it.
Hella?
Hella, thank you.
Well, we don't know that. We don't know that Hella's dead.
Oh, she's gone.
No, she got eaten. She might live. Gods are tricky that way.
I know, but I would love to see more with Emma.
I do know that she was part of the X-Men for a while.
Yeah, she was kind of one of those where she would be part of the X-Men, but then she'd go back to be part of the Hellfire Club and mm-hmm. then go back to being the X-Men. She was kind
she
of
also, she also led Jet X for a while.
Yes. She would do whatever fit her. Like she was like Gambit. Gambit was a good guy, but could also be a thief and a bad guy when he wanted to mm-hmm. be. So anyways, I didn't mean to hijack that moment.
She's also like the one person that could get Scott Summers to cheat on Jean.
Oh.
which I wasn't reading the comics at the time, but even I heard about that. It's like, oh, whoa. Suddenly Scott Summers got interesting.
All right. Well,
sorry.
Here we go. Let's do this round robin style then. Our favorite moment from the entire movie. Carrie, what about you? What was one of your favorite? What's your favorite moment in the entire film?
Well, and all of the interactions between Mystique and Beast, because Beast is one of my favorite mutants ever. And second to that is trading Havoc and Banshee, especially with, you know, when Eric pushes Banshee off the satellite dish. That was just like, dude,
was good.
That's awesome.
Well, let me ask you this then, since you liked Beast, did you like the way, or Hank and Beast, did you like Nicholas Holt as Hank and Beast?
I love Nicholas Holt as Beast as a young Beast. Sure. I mean, don't get me wrong, the casting of Kelsey Grammer in Last Stand was spot on. Like as soon as they cast him as Beast for Last Stand, all I heard was, "Oh, my stars and garters," in his voice, and like, perfect. That's it. But Nicholas as the young version of Hank McCoy was great. And just the comic geek in me liked that we had at least one of the original X-Men at the start of all this.
I was going to say, I really liked the human version of him, but I did not like the Beast rendition.
He got better as things progressed. I think the makeup got better as things progressed.
I think that the makeup department really did butcher him a little bit. I wasn't a fan. I think it took me a little bit out of his character, but I like Beast. I do agree with you. When they casted, what was his name?
Kelsey Grammer?
Yes, when they casted him, it was like absolutely amazing because he is the Beast. So I just feel like the makeup just killed it for me.
Yeah,
I can kind of see that. I think I square it in my head that in that his Beast form was still evolving a bit, because we've seen it in the comics too, where it's like he start like. There was a point in the comics where he looked more like what he looked like in, say, you know, the animated series, mm-hmm. where he looked like kind of a man, but he was fuzzy and blue. And then at some point, his mutation accelerated to a point where he looked more like a blue lion. And I think that's what they were going for in this. And it doesn't quite work, but I think he's still mutating at that point, and the serum hasn't completely worked through his system yet.
Right.
He needs to pump some iron.
Yeah. He's going through puberty. Again.
Again.
He's going through puberty.
Yeah. Fred,
drugs
what about
are bad.
You?
That's the lesson there.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Go ahead. That scene where Shaw and Azazel like break into the Langley CIA headquarters there, and they're killing all the agents and they're teleporting and they're just slaughtering them. I thought that entire scene was done really well.
Agreed.
Oh yeah.
So much violence.
Hey, listen, Azazel was really good, and I had to look up a little bit of information about him because I didn't know too much, but I didn't realize that in comics, Azazel and Mystique got together, and that's how we get Nightcrawler.
Yeah. I wish there was more.
I actually
more to
did
that.
Not know that.
There
could have been, Andrea. I mean, I'm just saying, we saw how Mystique was in this movie. I'm just saying.
Very raunchy.
You know what? Mystique? Mystique got with several people. She's Nightcrawler's mom. She got with Victor Creed for a while, and that the result of that was Graydon Creed, who is a rat bastard in the comics. the mutant gene skipped him on both sides. Yeah. So yeah.
But I do agree with you, though, Fred. I really love that scene at Langley where they were just getting just like straight ripped up.
It gives you that like sense of fear for the heroes and the possibility that, you know, like, how are they going to get through this? And there's a chance that they won't, and or at least not everyone. Obviously, we know Xavier and a couple of the other ones do, but.
Well, it also shows the power of the mutants and, I mean, how much they hold back in all the X-Men movies. They could easily wipe out all humanity if they wanted to.
Right.
Yeah.
I will agree with that. That scene was pretty cool, with the exception of, and one of my least favorite moments in the movie is actually when they kill Darwin, a.k.a. the only black man in the cast. Like, oh. Yeah, it's like, and I don't mean for this to get political or anything, but once you start noticing a pattern like that, you know, you can't not notice it anymore. So like, okay, it's like, oh yeah, the one black guy is gonna be the one that dies, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah,
I have a lot of criticisms for this movie for these negative stereotypes, like killing the one black guy, the amount of sexism that they portrayed. Sure, they're act the '60s, but we're beyond that. Come on.
Yeah.
What were you gonna say?
I was just gonna say, let's talk about then some of those criticisms. I'll just say real quick, my favorite moment was obviously the teens hanging out and showing off their abilities, because it showed just a genuineness of actual teenagers with really cool abilities and never being able to open up to people before, and now they're able to open up to one another, not realizing there's other people like them. And then just showing off to one another. I thought that was a really cool scene. Andrea, what was one of your favorite moments? Because I really want to get into some of Fred's criticisms here.
Everything with Eric. I really, really love just when movies are able to bring in a character that's an antagonist. Or I don't want to say a bad guy, because he does some good things in this one. But you bring in an antagonist that is so compelling, and like, you understand his anger, you understand his need for revenge. And even though it's not the right thing to do, it's understandable. And I really just love how he was portrayed and how he was acted. I really loved it. It's very interesting that Mike liked the teens hanging out. I felt like the writing was just very sloppy with a lot of the characters, but Eric seemed to be the most consistent.
Yeah. And it's like, I mean, none of us can actually understand where Eric is coming from, because none of us have actually been in that situation, but I mean, it is historical fact that there were people in the, you know, 50s and 60s that would go out and hunt down, you know, former SS. You know, and it is historical fact that a lot of the former SS fled to South America, because why not?
Right.
And stuff like that. I like how complex that makes his character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like, you know, it's like Eric isn't wrong, but his methods are wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So let's talk about least favorite moments. And I want to get to this so we can talk about least favorite moments. Fred, I'm going to let you, because I'm pretty sure some of your criticisms from the film come in this discussion. So what were some of the criticisms about the film that did not set well?
Well, let's talk about the Darwin death a little bit. Darwin has the ability to adapt to survive.
Pretty much anything. Yeah.
So if he's put underwater, he grows gills. If he's hit with something strong, he grows like iron
tough
skin.
Tough skin, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the two things is, one, he did die. That's what a lot of people believe. And then the other suggestion is that he either evolved beyond like the physical form.
Oh, that could be interesting.
So but we're never going to see him again.
No, we're not going to see him again. So it kind of doesn't matter.
Right. It's just one of those, like, I don't know. I really didn't like that they put it in the movie. At least if he did evolve beyond humanity, they didn't explain that in any which way, shape, or form. They never brought him back later in the film or anything like that, or any future film for that matter.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
It was kind of a demonstration that even mutants as seemingly powerful as Darwin have their limits to which they can't go beyond.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also the implication that maybe he's not completely gone.
Right.
Well, if it wasn't Darwin that got killed, this is going to sound terrible when I say
it would have been Angel. So
who do you think should have gotten axed?
Either Angel or Banshee.
No, not Banshee.
Because you like him? Because you like him?
Because of his appearances in X-Men, the animated series, I have a bit of a soft spot for Banshee. More so, though, his daughter. And if Banshee is killed before before his daughter is born, that just sucks. So.
Yeah. Hey, you know, I thought about this, Fred. You know, Darwin could still show up. He's not gone. If he's transcended, he's found a way to move through the multiverse and could show up in the MCU still. Just saying. Ooh. Boom. Yep. Come on.
That'd be cool.
He could be hanging out with Jean.
Yeah,
maybe.
What's up? Oh, you got killed too by a bunch of water? Man, let me tell you what happened to me.
So. Well, I mean, and Banshee is actually another one of those complex characters in the X-Men universe because his cousin is Black Tom, and I think one of his daughters is Siren. So yeah, okay. And Siren was badass in the comics. So
okay. So,
another one of my big criticisms is with Charles Xavier and how he treats his adopted sister, Mystique.
Yes.
Yeah, I was so turned off with their interactions. And again, I blame the writing. Charles Xavier, like, he seemed in this movie like a little bit of a douchebag at points.
Yes.
Thank and I did you. Not like it. I thought he was so disrespectful. Like he went around in circles when she wanted some clarity and some love and affection from him. And like, that's not the way to treat people. And that's not the Charles Xavier like we grew up to love in the first three X-Men movies.
Well, okay. I give him a tiny bit of latitude on this because I think they were trying to show that even someone like Charles Xavier can have
flaws,
blind flaws and blind spots when it comes to how accepting he is of mutant powers, because that is one of the points that they were trying to drive home. It's like, Charles accepts Raven's abilities, but he doesn't accept that she naturally looks a certain way. That she is naturally,
which is something that he fights for, though. Like, that's the thing. Like, he always has fought for mutants and their differences.
And maybe this is why he fought so hard later for mutants to be out in public and in all their glory, rather than, you know, hiding in the shadows and hiding their appearance.
I appreciate that to a certain degree, and I understand and can respect that people need to be shown why it's wrong and then learn from that. And if that's the case, sure. But at the beginning of the movie, when he first meets her, she's breaking into his home to steal food. They get off on such a good start, and she is her true self in that moment. And there was no, like,
fear or disgust. comfort in that interaction.
Okay, there might not have been fear or discomfort in that interaction, but how were they when they went out in public?
But she was never blue, right? Like
exactly. Yeah. Was that him making her hide all this time? Was that her hiding herself all this time? Was it a bit of both?
I think it was. I don't think Charles would be like, "Hey, Mystique, grow some human skin so that you don't look weird." I think it was just to protect her. I don't like.
Yeah, but at what point does protection become taking for granted that?
I think I see where you're going with mm-hmm. it. It's like, okay, you're trying to protect them, but you're also preventing them from being their selves.
Right, right.
Where do you draw the line?
Exactly.
I just felt like his lines were douchey.
Well, yeah, well, I mean, there were several things that were... They were a bit douchey.
There was that one scene where, like, he's picking up that other girl in the bar, and he goes home with his sister, and then the next day she's like, "Oh, would you date me?" And just that whole interaction just felt so cringy.
I didn't think that I knew that she loved him and, like, she cared about him, and she just wanted somebody to look at her without seeing, like, the blue mutation as like a deformity or something like that. But I feel like it was, again, like poorly written, the way that these interactions came about. It just felt out of character for both of them. Nobody would ever talk that way. And I felt like that was the biggest problem with this movie. There were a lot of lines, a lot of quotations that were just seemingly thrown there to do kind of like a justice for everyone that's different. But it did not sound natural. And that was problematic for me. It felt like it was just forced. And I think this is where we see a lot of, like, not the Charles Xavier that I like.
He's not the Charles Xavier that has evolved into the person that we know and love.
Yeah.
And
I think... go ahead, Carrie.
Well, I kind of got what they were trying to do with that conversation that you referenced between Mystique and Charles. But after, you know, a couple of decades together, basically... of him thinking of her as a sister.
It was very uncharacteristic.
It was kind of odd to just turn around and say, "Would you consider dating me if I looked like that?" Like, no, you don't. You don't ask your brother that.
Well, right? I'm not.
Rather, quotations.
Brother, in quotations, like. I get what they were trying to do. It's like okay, if we had not grown up the way we had, if I walked into a room looking like this, looking like, you know, blue skin, red hair, am I the kind of person that you would date? And the answer is probably no at that point. But I see what they were trying to do.
Mike, what do you have to say?
I get that. I understand that. My only thing is, it seems, for somebody who was fighting for mutant rights-ish to a point in this movie, now I know he's not fighting for the mutant rights as much as he does in the other X-Men movies, but the fact that he's trying to get other people to be so comfortable in their own skin and be comfortable with their own abilities in public in this movie, and then turn around and not allow it for Mystique, just seemed extremely uncharacteristic of Charles Xavier. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, to me, it's almost the analogy of people have an issue with this Charles Xavier because of how he treated Mystique. People have an issue with Henry Cavill's portrayal of Superman and Man of Steel because he wasn't the golden boy scout that we see him in everything else. It was uncharacteristic, and I think people had an issue with that. Me, I liked it personally. We'll talk about that when we get to it. But you know, this, and I think that's why people had an issue with this Charles, because it was very uncharacteristic of who he is and what he stood for.
But if he was still very young. Yes, and that's the thing. Like, if he was young and naive and just made these decisions because he didn't know any better, and we saw progression throughout the movies, I wouldn't have a problem with that. I'd be like, okay, yeah, like, he learned from his mistakes, and now he's advocating, and he knows, like, better than to do what he did in the past. But there is never that bridge built.
Right. I think that's kind of what we get to in the next movie. We're not up to future past Days of Future Past yet. That's another decade later. He has clearly evolved into someone who is more accepting of mutations that are physical in nature rather than just, you know, mental or power based.
Yeah.
Right.
So, okay.
Another big criticism I had was one of the last lines of the movie. They're sitting around the table. I forget her name. Xavier's girlfriend. He kissed her. Moira. She goes back. Yeah.
Oh, Moira. My gosh, yes.
And Xavier has wiped her memory. And there's, what, 20 people sitting around the table?
They're all men. Yeah.
And she can't remember anything because her memory's been wiped. And one man stands up and says, and this is why you don't invite women to the CIA.
Yeah.
Or something to that effect.
Yeah. And I think that was another, you know, sign of the times type thing. It's like, yeah, we don't want women on subs because they're too emotional and stuff like that.
But, like,
it's all BS.
If you're trying to make a movie with the times, like, bring in the times a little bit more, because the way that it was written, it didn't feel like it was a timepiece. It felt more like an insult. And, yes. And throughout the whole entire movie, women, and again, maybe it was because of time period, women were being sexualized so much in this movie that, like, one, it's uncomfortable. Two, like, I just preferred to see the men at this point because of how terrible the writing was. And again, if they were trying to portray how women were so sexualized or were treated like crap back in the day, they didn't do a good time establishing a really solid time period when it came to other things other than the nuclear warfare that was going on.
Right.
Well, it was 62 was the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much the time period we're looking at with this.
I thought they did a really good job doing a timepiece for Eric, and his origin. I thought that was really well done. I liked how they tied in the Cuban Missile Crisis to this movie, and they brought in, you know, clips of Kennedy and whatnot. But all the other scenes that just didn't fit.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what they were wearing. Like, I understand Angel, because she was a stripper and blah, blah, blah. Like, I get it. But, like, and again, like, I kind of understand Emma Frost and the way that she's dressed, because that's really, like, what we see in the comics. But it's, again, like, I feel like they're overly sexualizing these females, and it took away from the seriousness of the movie.
So do you think
Moira wasn't scantily clad at all, except for
that one scene
where she was, you know, sneaking in with the rest of the hookers to get dirt on
that
on
was
welfare club.
So, hey, I'm gonna do something that the CIA didn't train me for.
So do you think that maybe because it was set in that time frame, they thought they could
get away with it?
Get away with a lot more than that they did, as because of the fact that it was set in that time period. Maybe the writers thought that they could.
Maybe.
That's what it's. And that's the problem is
that's
you
what
can
we're
tell,
hoping it is.
You can tell yeah. while watching the movie, they're trying to set this in the time period, but we're so far outside of it and it's not landing well.
No, but like the thing is that there are timepieces that do the whole entire sexist thing extremely well. And you know that it's not the writing, you know, it's not like, you know, that it's because of the time period. In this right. one, it felt very disconnected. It felt like it was happening because these are just the hot girls that have superpowers. I don't
know. Well, no, it felt that way because the men who were being overly sexist were just overly sexist. Like, I mean, Sebastian Shaw treated Emma like crap.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
but he treated everyone like crap. So
just the whole entire scene where like Emma Frost is with that German
Yes,
she undresses herself, and then she in his mind puts this idea that they're doing the hokey pokey. Don't like it. It was just sex for sex, and that's not
no. She was seducing him in order to get what Sebastian needed to get out of him, but because of the way her powers work, she can seduce him without actually physically being with him, which I find, you know, it's like, okay, if I don't actually have to do the deed, then
it's kind of gross still.
It's super gross, but it's less gross if I could, you know, have him think I'm only think he's having sex with me when I'm sitting over here knitting rather than actually having sex with him. That would be even worse. So I was like it's like she knew what she needed to do to get what she needed from him, and she has a perfect loophole.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's do this then. Does anybody else have anything that they didn't like about the film? I mean, I personally didn't like how Xavier got paralyzed.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was... I understand that they had to eventually paralyze him because, you know, he's got to be wheels. But I think it was so... I think it was so stupid that the way he got paralyzed was Magneto deflecting a bullet and it hitting his spine. I understand it. I get it that it would come from his friend, quote unquote, that this would happen. But it just seems so...
It's underwhelming. Underwhelming.
Exactly. Thank you. It's so underwhelming. Like, if it was like a one-on-one mutant battle... And then that's how he got injured. Cool, I'm down with that. But the fact that this is this, you know, this Moira or whatever her name was, would come out and start shooting at Magneto, knowing this dude blocks metal.
Mm-hmm.
And Magneto deflected one, and that's how he got paralyzed. I'm sitting there thinking, oh my goodness, because she comes out of nowhere.
Magneto doesn't come out of nowhere. He just stops them.
Well, no, because she was trying to distract him, because he still had all those missiles in the air. He was still sending missiles towards all of the ships off the coast of Cuba.
Right.
So her shooting him distracted him long enough that the rest of the missiles dropped. And the tragedy of it all is that one of those bullets he deflected right into Charles. And Charles getting hurt is what finally got him to stop.
Okay. I mean, I don't know.
I didn't like it either, but that's...
I liked Fred's word. It was very underwhelming. Is where I'm getting at on it. So, We've talked about a lot of criticism. Does anybody have any more criticism before we get into our favorite character of the movie?
No, let's get to something more positive. Okay, no, Fred has something to say.
No, I was just going to say, once you look beyond these like criticisms that we have, there's actually a good movie underneath.
Oh, yes. Yeah, definitely.
And we really enjoyed it. It's just, it takes you out in these few scenes. You're like, oh, really? But yeah, going beyond that, there was a really good movie underneath.
Yeah. I agree. All right. Favorite character. I liked Eric and as Magneto. I thought he played the character of Magneto perfectly. I think I liked Eric in this movie.
Eric was fascinating.
Yeah.
But Magneto usually is a pretty fascinating character, even with how they've evolved his character so that he has become a child of the Holocaust and stuff like that. I don't think that was part of the original storyline for him. I'd have to go back and look. But that is his evolution and his coming out of the Holocaust and having that have such an impact on everything that he does from this point forward is just, it's fascinating. And that's going through all of the X-Men movies.
Yeah.
He's a character that is written extremely well and just the acting was phenomenal. So he is another one of my favorites in this movie for sure.
All right. So Andrea, who else did you like in this movie?
I really, really enjoyed Havoc. I just think he was a really interesting character and just how he was able to rein in his powers. I thought that was pretty unique. And then I actually did not like Angel. I just liked her wings and her tattoos. They were super cool. And if I could have those tattoos, I would.
Well, see, here's my problem with Angel. It has nothing to do with her as a character. It's just that every time someone says Angel in the context of X-Men, I think Warren Worthington III, who's a completely different character.
She should have been called Tempest, because that's her comic name.
Yeah.
It's a tempest.
Yeah, I get that they went with Angel for some reason, but she was really more of a fairy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they've like given her like name like, you know, Pixie or something, and it
or
was
Mosquito.
Mosquito. Wow. Wow.
Mosquito.
Oh dear, but I will agree with you on Havoc, Andrea. Havoc is usually the more interesting of the Summers boys.
I like Havoc. I like Havoc greatest.
What about you, Fred? Who was your favorite?
This is tough. Okay, so obviously I'm gonna say Magneto, just like everyone else. Mystique, I really liked her ability. Maybe not the best acted in this one, but pretty close. Azazel, I thought was a really great character, even though on the opposite side.
He is an interesting one. I wish we could get a little bit more of him.
I do too. Yeah. I do too. Carrie, what about you? Who was your favorite character?
Top of the list has got to be Beast, because he's one of my... I have a weakness for the Blue Mutants. So
I thought you were gonna say you have a weakness for hairy men, but
I have a weakness for the Blue Mutants. So the Blue and Fuzzy ones. So yeah, Beast and Nightcrawler are my two top favorite mutants, with Gambit and Angel, following close behind. The original X-Men, who was Angel, not Tempest. I should clarify that. I get what you guys are saying about Charles, but Charles is one of my favorite characters. Just like all of the different facets of him and how watching how he's evolved over all of these movies. I getting to see him when he is not quite the Xavier that we know is kind of illuminating. And fascinating to see that him go from and having to having to deal with his own prejudices about mutants, even as he is trying to, you know, make the world a safer place for mutants. You understand that he still is wrestling with his own you know, preconceived notions about what mutants should be.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I think we've kind of already talked a little bit about this. But the character we wish was written better. Anybody? Of course, I put in here, apart from all the criticisms we said earlier, I put
in. Yeah, you're,
The problem with trying to say which X-Men we wish could have been written better is...
There's so many of them.
Yeah.
Number one, there's so many X-Men, but number two, there's so many X-Men that probably could have been written better. So, okay.
I think we've talked a little bit about like how I wish the writing would have been a little bit better, a little bit cleaner with some of the characters, and if they wanted to showcase more immature or unaware characteristic to these characters because they were younger, they didn't do it as cleanly as possible. So I will say Charles, Mystique, and Emma; those are the ones that I think should have been written better.
Okay.
If we had to choose one, I'd definitely be choosing Charles.
Okay. Yeah, Charles Xavier needs some help, yo. Just saying.
he's got three more movies to.
He'll get better.
He'll get better.
Hopefully.
We're just talking about this one film.
He's got to have a conversation with himself at some point.
Oh my!
Quite literally.
While he's recovering.
Okay.
This is why he was shot in the back, because he was a jerk. Too soon?
Wow.
Oh. All right. Favorite aspect of the film?
Eric's story. All of it. I just enjoyed it. It just had a beginning, a middle, an end, and you understood his mission from the very beginning. And I really enjoyed just seeking out the mutants. I thought it was really fun. Fun little peek at just everybody.
Yes.
I agree with Andrea.
I agree as well. No, I agree as well. I also like the establishment of Charles's house as the school and all the pre-X-Men days of figuring out where things are going to go and finding the bunker underneath the building and stuff like that. That was neat. The introduction of the SR-71 Blackbird like 10, 20 years before it really should have been introduced to the world. That was cool. Mm-hmm. And the fact that the original Cerebro looked like a ginormous golf ball.
Yeah.
I just found that amusing.
I really, like Andrea said, I really like the origin story for Eric, or going into much more detail around it. Another aspect that I really liked was tying this movie together with real world events, Cuban Missile Crisis and the Cold War. I thought that was just really, really neat to see.
Yeah. And I'm there too. I liked Eric's story because it had, as y'all said, a beginning, middle, and an end, and it had a great overall character development. And in a character arc, so I was down with it.
I also liked you know, bringing in the kind of the like the real world science into it, because there was a discussion about, you know, how Homo sapien kind of became the dominant creature, the dominant like humanoid on the planet, and you know that is factually correct. You know, the Neanderthals died out because Homo sapien became the dominant species. I mean, there are some Neanderthal DNA in some of us, but you know, there aren't any Neanderthals anymore.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. All right, here we go. Funnest part, Andrea. Favorite quote of the movie. Hang on. Let me get my censor button ready.
So, during the scene where they're seeking out the mutants, we do get a beautiful moment where they are Charles and Eric are looking for Logan, and they find him at a bar. And as soon as they walk in, Logan senses them and he says, "Go F yourself." And I thought that was beautiful. And they just like, they don't even say anything. They just look at each other and walk away. So I thought that was a beautiful scene. And then I have two others. The first one is at the very beginning of the movie, when Charles is at the bar. And he's talking to a co-ed, and he says, heterochromia was in reference to your eyes, which I have to say are stunning. One green, one blue. It's a mutation. It's a very groovy mutation. I've got news for you, Amy. You are a mutant." And then the co-ed says, "First you preposition a girl, then you call her deformed. How is that seduction technique working for you?" I thought that was beautiful. I thought it was really funny. I really did not like that he kept on saying groovy throughout the movie. I thought Fred mentioned it. He was like, "Oh, this Austin Powers.
Groovy baby.
Groovy baby."
It was 60s lingo.
Yeah.
It's like after the second time he tried to use it on Moira, it's like, "Oh, dude, your pickup lines need work."
Yeah. And then the last one that I liked, it was one of the better quotes about empowerment in this movie. It was, "If you're using half of your concentration to look normal, then you're only half paying attention to whatever else you're doing. Just pointing out something that could save your life. You want society to accept you, but you can't even accept yourself."
Boom. And I thought that was
beautiful.
Yeah. I really like that quote as well.
That was a really good one. One of the ones I had, it deals with Angel Eric. They go into the strip club, and Angel goes, Eric gives Angel a big tip. "For that, Daddy-O, you get a private dance." Inside the private dance room, you guys know it's double for both, right? Xavier says, now that won't be necessary, although I am sure it would be magical. Eric says, "We were thinking more, we'll show you ours if you show us yours."
Yeah.
Says, "Hey, that's not how it works around here."
I remember seeing somewhere that, you know, they actually had to change that scene because people thought it looked too much like Eric and Charles were there together, as in not hunting for mutants, and this was still 2010, and we were not quite as evolved on on such matters as we are right now. It's only 10 years away, dear gods.
Oh yeah. What about you, Carrie?
I've been at the mercy of men just following orders, never again. That is applicable for a lot of things. And then, "Are you sure we can't shave your head? Don't touch my hair."
Foreshadowing.
Fred, you got a favorite quote?
Yeah, so this is from Eric, as he's finally got Shaw in his grasp. If you're in there, I'd like you to know that I agree with every word you said. We are the future. But unfortunately, you killed my mother. This is what we're going to do. I'm going to count to three, and I'm going to move the coin. One, two, 3.
That was a really crazy scene.
I thought that scene was probably one of the best scenes in the movie.
It was very well done, and I mean, that's pretty much the only way you're going to incapacitate him.
I mean, that dude, the way he slowly pushed the quarter through his head was
dark. It was dark, but it was
like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
It was dark, but again, you know, knowing that Sebastian Shaw's powers are impact based, that's pretty much the only way you could do anything to actually harm him.
Mm-hmm.
The slow motion kill.
Well, yeah. I think he just wanted to do that just to make him feel every bit of it. I don't think it was because of the energy. Too. I just think he wanted him to feel every bit of the pain.
Well, that's like a bonus.
So, okay. All right. So were there any plot holes, Andrea, in this wonderful 10 out of 10 movie here?
There was probably 1,000 plot holes, so I tried to cherry pick a few good ones for you, Andrea.
Thank you, because I wasn't going to read them all. So, anachronisms. At around 49 minutes, when Eric and Charles are talking on the steps of the Abraham Lincoln Memorial, one can notice a World War II memorial in front of the Washington Memorial. The World War II memorial was not built and opened to public until 2004.
Again, you know, introduction of the SR-71 Blackbird 20 years before it was actually introduced.
So just maybe we can stop there for a second, because they did actually mark that one on the site. Let me pull it up real quick as incorrectly marked as a spoiler or goof.
If I can
find it real quick.
The one about the ship?
The Blackbird?
Yeah, the Blackbird. So while Fred is looking it up, there's another one. In 1944, Charles's room has a picture of Albert Einstein, which was not taken until 1947. I did notice that, and it was a little bit creepy that he had it in his nightstand, but that's beyond. Okay.
Okay, so the quote here is incorrectly regarded as goofs. An SR-71 Blackbird could only hold a maximum of crew of 2 in the cockpit. The scene where they're all sitting in the back is actually just engines. However, despite their similar appearances, the plane we see is the X-Men using here is not the Blackbird, but an early prototype of the X-Jet that they use in the film set later on.
Well, I mean, in the X-Men animated series, they do refer to the plane as the Blackbird. So maybe that's just me, you know, reconciling the two together. My parents did know someone who worked on the Blackbird, fun fact. And,
oh, very cool.
Yeah, and while he was working on it, the only thing he could really say was that it was big and black.
Interesting.
Mm. Well, I'm just kidding. Okay.
I'm digressing. I mean, the plane wasn't black either. So you know, I get what you're saying.
All right, so let's keep it moving. So at around 18 minutes in the hotel, when Moira spies on Sebastian Shaw, there is a bowl of M&Ms on the table. Some are blue, a color not added to M&M bags until 1995. That's pretty cool.
These people have.
I know. The film shows CIA headquarters at Langley in 1962. The construction for the Langley headquarters didn't even start until 1965. The first secretaries didn't move into the building until 1968. In 1962, the CIA operated out of several different buildings in D.C. The bra styles that Emma Frost wears are not 1960s style. They are modern styles worn today. Also, the boots that Angela wears are not 1960s style boots. And this goes against us wanting to redeem this movie and say, oh, this is a timepiece. Like, no. It's just sex, okay? Sex sells. All right. Many of the ships and weapons seen in the U.S. and Soviet fleet did not exist in 1962 at the time of the Cuban Missile Crisis. For example, the U.S. flagship is the USS Iowa, but the Iowa was not in service at the time. Even if she had been, the ship was not fitted with the CIWS Gatling gun defense system until the 1980s. Amongst the collection of missiles fired at the beach are Harpoon anti-ship missiles, which came into service in 1977, and Tomahawk missiles, which came into service in the 1970s. On the Soviet side, the flagship appears to be a Cresta-class cruiser, a design not in service until 1967. So if you know your ships, you know this movie's wrong. Yeah. And then finally, in terms of anachronisms, the Coast Guard cutter in Miami has U.S. Coast Guard painted on its hull. Coast Guard cutters. Didn't add the letters U.S. to their hulls until the 1990s. Before, they were just had the word Coast Guard. All right. So, when it comes to character errors, at around 1 hour and 8 minutes, during the negotiations with the Russian general, Sebastian Shaw points to Iran on the map when actually he's speaking about Turkey. What a loser. At around 15 minutes, the scene when Magneto pulls the filling out of the banker's mouth. After removing the filling, the man grabs the wrong side of his mouth in pain. I thought that was uncomfortable. That. Super stuff.
That made me hurt.
Yeah. That made my teeth hurt.
I'm happy right. I don't have metal fillings anymore.
Yeah. When Moira stumbles into the secret room at the Hellfire Club, Emma Frost should have immediately detected her presence since there was merely a bookcase separating them. She had sufficient time to detect before morphing into her diamond form.
Oops.
Yeah.
Well,
she was
her powers aren't. Yeah, she was focused on the general.
Yeah. Dude. Continuity. The U.S. battleship at Cuba changes its hull number intermediately between 61 and 62. Oops. Dun, dun, dun. And then more factual errors. At around 1 hour and 12 minutes, the general in the war room mistakenly calls upon the mobilization of the 7th Fleet to intercept Soviet ships bound for Cuba. It was the U.S. 2nd Fleet that intercepted the Soviet ships during the Cuba Missile Crisis. The 7th Fleet is and has always been based in the Pacific, currently stationed out of Yokosuka, Japan.
Hmm.
Whew. That was a lot.
It was.
And that's just a sample of what's
there's a lot more.
Come back next week and we're going to have Andrew read every single one.
Yeah. Bonus content there.
Oh. All right. So Rotten Tomatoes obviously had some things to say about this movie. And a couple of quotes from Rotten Tomatoes. One editor said, "In truth, the film is a very conventional summer potboiler repackaged in reasonably pretty, moderately crisp wrapping paper. In short, not quite groovy enough." Fassbender's performance as Magneto makes me feel how I wanted to feel about Anakin in any of the Star Wars prequels. Wow. Oh, that thought was one of my favorites. So good old Rotten Tomatoes. All right, we've come to that point, Carrie, where we are going to rate this movie now. So what we give this movie. Go all ahead.
Right. Out of 10 sexist comments, what do you give this? I like that better. Out of 10 coins to the face, what do you guys rate this movie, Andrea?
Oh my goodness, I might get a coin in my head for saying this.
No.
So I'm gonna give this movie a 4.5 coins to the head.
Guys.
I'm looking at like all of my ratings and stuff like that. Honestly, I'd rather see Hellboy again than this movie. So yeah, 4.5, and I wish I could say more, like that I liked it more because I love X-Men. Like I love it so much. I did like crazy fan fiction for it. Not the bad way, the fun way. So I love X-Men. So it's just really disappointing that this movie just didn't make the cut for me.
Okay. Fred?
Maybe with the Hellfire Club. I don't know. But I'm giving this a 6.5.
Oh.
Oh, snap.
Wow.
Oh, snap. He's got it.
Fred? No, not Fred. Mike?
Say it again, Fred.
I don't know if it was the Hellfire Club, but I'm giving this one a 6.5.
Mike.
Oh, no. At a, 1 out of 10. Slow coins pushed through your brain. I'm going to give this one, I'm going to give it a 6 out of 10 as well. I wish I could give it more. Again, I didn't like a lot of the comments myself, and some of the stuff that it was, there were some plot holes, some issues, but, overall, it was as Fred said earlier, when you take all that crap away, it was a very good story and a very good built movie. Mm-hmm. So...
I'm going to give this a 7.
Whoa.
This is one of the better X-Men movies. Not quite as good as X2. And I think Days of Future Past is a better movie than this one. But I really like the exploration of, how things got started with this iteration of the X-Men universe. I really do like this movie. Even with all of its flaws, I think it's a really good movie. So yeah, I'm going to give it a 7.
I must have been drinking the pissy juice because
that's okay, Andrea.
All right. Maybe I should watch it again.
No, because
next week we're watching something else.
I'm so excited.
And that might make you pissier. I don't know.
No, we
get to watch something wonderful, something magical next time, something exhilarating next time.
Are you okay, Mike?
Something full of greenness, and that is, we're gonna watch Green Lantern next week.
In the words of Kermit the Frog, it's not easy being green. So,
I was gonna say Mike needs to be careful, or Deadpool might show up at his door and shoot him in the head for praising the movie.
Hey, I'm ready for Deadpool.
I don't know if this is a tease or if this is a spoiler, but yeah, Green Lantern 26 on the tomato meter, 45 for the audience score. So that's gonna be a fun one to watch. I've never seen it before. Never have, and
I'm so excited to talk about it.
I've seen it once. Have you seen it, Andrea?
Yeah.
Okay.
More than once.
I've seen it a few times myself.
Yeah.
Do you like it, Andrea?
You're gonna have to tune in to find out.
And while you do tune in, Fred, what can they do if they want to get involved in that conversation?
Well, we want to hear from you. First off, did you like X-Men First Class? We want to know. Do you have the same viewpoints as us? Did we miss something that was really important to you? Let us know. Email us at capechronicles@randomchatter.com. We'd love to go through your review. You could also reach out to us on Twitter at Random Chatter or at Cape Chronicles, or you can reach any one of us, the hosts. Mike, where can we find you on Twitter?
I am on Twitter at @TheDCMike, or I am on Discord.
And Carrie, where can we find you?
You can find me at CarrieBlackfire42. That's K-E-R-I Blackfire42. I read that the wrong possible time, Andrea. Thank you.
And Andrea, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at KatzBears. That's KatzBears.
And you can find me on Twitter at FreddyWonKenobi. That's FreddyWon Kenobi. You're terrible.
Yo.
You are so terrible.
Yo, if we were on video, we'd be kicked off by now. Oh.
You can find Cape Chronicles and all the other shows on the Random Chatter Network at randomchatter.com. Please help and spread the word and support us. We are truly appreciate it. Please leave us reviews on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, wherever you listen to this hot mess. Please leave us a review. We truly appreciate it. Any reviews that you leave, we will read them on the air. I promise, most of the time. As silly as the sentence sounds, the music you hear in this podcast is High Roller Mojo by Blue Stally. And sorry, as silly as the sentence sounds, all trademarks are owned by the respective owners.
Have another drink, Fred.
Until next time.
Until next time.
Live it up, everybody. We'll see you on Cape Chronicles.